The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
KMED, here's Bill Myers.
Oh, no, wait a minute. I know it's a different time, but we have to have Rick's theme instead.
This is the craziest party that could ever be. Don't turn on the lights because I don't want to see. I'm not tall and
Rick Manning, President of Americans for Limited Government, a day early, and we're just glad to have you here on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Rick, welcome back.
Perfect day.
Yeah.
Perfect day.
It is.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is, I may be a day early, but I hope I'm not a dollar short.
You are certainly not.
I'll be good.
You're certainly not. Now, everybody I'm talking to this morning, I asked him, well, okay, did you get a chance to watch the Kamala Harris interview on MSNBC? And, of course, I had to work really hard just to find MSNBC on my television box first. You know, I never watched it, right?
Yeah.
And then I found out I was an hour late. I was an hour late for the Kamala thing. But we do have a couple of sound bites here, and I just want to run a couple by you and and get your overall impression, especially having – watched the Trump economic impact of 2016 through 2020, and this was one clip that kind of intrigued me. I don't think she has it right. I could be wrong. Okay.
Polling shows that most likely voters still think Donald Trump is better to handle the economy. Why do you think that is?
Well, here's what I know in terms of the facts. Donald Trump left us with the worst economy since the Great Depression, when you look at, for example, the employment numbers.
It was during COVID, and employment was so high because we shut down the government, we shut down the country.
Even before the pandemic, he lost manufacturing jobs by most people's estimates, at least 200,000. He lost manufacturing plants, ask the auto workers.
Okay, now, I was thinking she kind of made that up or was playing fast and loose with it. I was under the impression that at last count, I'm no expert on this kind of stuff, and I wish I was a numbers expert on this, but I thought it was about 400,000 manufacturing jobs overall created during his administration. I could be wrong about that. You recall?
Yeah, I remember it was 500,000, but nonetheless, okay. You had 500,000 through February of 2020. It could be 489, it could be 511, okay. But about 500,000 manufacturing jobs through February of 2020. Pandemic hits, the world gets shut down. Particularly the big Democrat-run states continue to stay shut down, like Michigan and Pennsylvania and states like that.
And I remember that Trump was really working hard to get them to reopen, right, to lighten up on that,
right.
Wasn't he, at the time?
And so, yes, he was. And so the manufacturing, a lot of the states with major manufacturing had Democrat governors, and they kept their economy shut down and tight. You know, Gavin Newsom in California, for instance. Oregon had the same problem, but not as much manufacturing.
No.
And so as a result, the manufacturing number dropped. But the fact is that during the pandemic, you had for two months, you had a massive drop in or increase in unemployment. You had about 26 million people unemployed. And by the time he left, there were about 8 or 9 million unemployed. Okay. So you had 8 to 10, I have to look at it, but basically 60% of the recovery had occurred. The places where the recovery hadn't fully occurred were largely the manufacturing states because they were late to reopen. And many of us contended the reason we're late to reopen is because they're trying to keep Donald Trump from winning again. There was a political ploy, guess what? The Democrats saw an opportunity, and they could blame Trump. And if they could win a state like Pennsylvania because they're keeping factories closed and keeping people, in jail and blaming Trump, and they get an extra 50,000, 35,000 votes, they win. That's what they did.
And that's kind of what happened. That's what happened in Pennsylvania, wasn't it? Yeah.
It is what happened. It happened in a lot of places. Michigan happened in New York, happened in California. So you look at it and you say – so, A, she's wrong in terms of her numbers, okay? She's just wrong. She's making it up. But, B, the jobs, many of the manufacturing jobs that Joe Biden supposedly created were merely jobs that were there that Trump created, or that at least the Trump economy created, that were just waiting to be reopened for Democrat governors to say it's okay to actually go to work.
Ah, okay. So they were there before they got shut down. And so once they are allowed to restart, that's counted as a new job. That's how that works.
That's a manufacturing job. Manufacturers do a report. They say, here's how many people we have employed in our plant. Sector are you in? We're in the manufacturing sector. Okay. here's how many manufacturing jobs are. It doesn't matter the circumstances when they're taking. These are just surveys that are the same every single month. And the fact is the Democrat governors, by and large, said, we are going to use this as a weapon against Donald Trump and we'll reopen after the election. And that's what they did.
Okay. All right. So they were happy to hurt their own people for political purposes. Got it.
Well, what's new?
Yeah.
What's new? Their entire platform is to hurt people for their own political purposes. So it's not exactly new that they're sitting there saying, gee whiz, we're going to keep people on a constant unemployed rate. Now, remember, there was a lot of subsidies to people who are unemployed. And truthfully, in a place like California, there was such massive fraud. I mean, it's billions of dollars of fraud in California off of the unemployment insurance that people claimed and then didn't. You know, the cartels were claiming it, and it was a big cartel game in California.
Nice.
By the way, the person from California is the labor secretary in California, who's Joe Biden wanted to be the labor secretary for the United States and didn't make it.
Well, nothing succeeds in D.C. like failure in your own state.
Yeah, so anyway, this is our, this is the ultimate. We hope you don't remember how it was in 2019 and that you think about, because from numbers, you can say whatever you want, but she can say factually that we had a high unemployment rate when Trump left office. What she doesn't add is any context to that. And the context is we're in the middle of a pandemic. And I don't know how the Democrats expect people to forget that.
And I also think that you also have to take to the bank then that there was the political decision that we're going to keep a lot of this closed down longer than it otherwise should, because it would not have looked good for Democrats or as good for Democrats. And it was a very close election. OK.
And I'll give you just a concrete example of South Dakota, which never really shut down under Governor Kristi Noem. Their unemployment rate was like 3.2%. Okay, their unemployment rate didn't. They were very rapidly back to 3.2%, 3% unemployment rate in South Dakota. Farm states that didn't shut down, their unemployment rate basically went up a little bit because they had this. They had the grocery stores and restaurants all shut down. But the minute the grocery stores and restaurants were opened up or were not really totally shut down, you saw all that employment, all the employment just flow back in. And that's the only thing that's different for the Biden administration benefited, because they got the rebound employment in big states that were, let's say, they were draconian.
Yeah, it wasn't due then to any overt economic policy choice that had been made. You know, that brought things back better than they were before. That kind of thing. Okay.
If you wanted to claim a policy choice that made a difference, mm-hmm. I think the getting rid of NAFTA and bringing in USMCA made a difference. It encouraged investment in factories in America, and that was rather than overseas. Mm-hmm. And USMCA created some changes from NAFTA that made it so it was much more advantageous to build things here rather than abroad. So when you look at it, you know, Trump did that. Trump passed USMCA and got rid of NAFTA. You know who voted against the implementation of USMCA? Kamala Harris. She was one of 10 that voted against the implementation of USMCA.
And remember, her values haven't changed.
NAFTA.
Take it to the bank, okay?
She voted to keep NAFTA. Any of those union people out there, I want you to understand, Kamala Harris voted against the implementation of the trade deal that ended NAFTA. Now, she voted for the initial deal.
Yeah.
But then she voted against its implementation. You know, one of those, John Kerry, I was on one side and then I was on the other.
Yeah, I was voting for it before I voted against it. Okay, got it. All right.
Yeah.
So, Rick, we will take that to the bank then. Rick Manning, president of Americans for Limited Government, DailyTorch.com.
I
was going to say .org, but no, that's your GetLiberty.org.
Yeah, GetLiberty.org. I get them confused all the time, too, and I've been saying it for 13 years. So.
Got it. All right. Hey, Rick, I wanted to focus on trade a bit here because I'm a little bit concerned because there are some things that all candidates running for office end up saying nonsense to a certain extent or another because, you know, you're out there trying to persuade. And let's face it, I think this is the simplest election of all time, in my view, because it is, as my friend Eric Peters over at epautos.com, he's an automotive journalist. He says, you know, your choice is between, you know, essentially the communist and the non-communist. Really? You know, that's really what we're talking about. And the non-communist in this particular case, Donald Trump. And it's not that hard of a choice, but there is a concern that I have that that there seems to be throwing around tariffs like a political weapon right now, and I get a little bit concerned about that. And one thing that they'll say is that I will make China pay the tariffs, right? Well, every time there's a tariff put on some kind of good, it raises our costs here in the United States. We end up paying it. Now, we might be paying it for a good reason, so this way we are able to encourage and bootstrap the return of higher-paying manufacturing jobs here, and it could be a national security issue too. But isn't it economic nonsense to say that China will pay for the tariff? If I'm wrong, I want to find out, okay?
Okay, well, okay, I'll say it simply, you're wrong.
Okay.
And here's why. In the case of China, they subsidize everything they export to the United States. And because the government subsidizes to make sure it's cheaper, their policy is they must have the cheapest goods on the market so they can sell them.
Right.
And as a result, when you put a tariff on China, it doesn't get past the consumer because the subsidy goes up to produce the goods. So what we're effectively doing is we're taxing the tariffs on China. Now, this isn't true if you're talking about the EU. It's not true if you're talking about other economies in the world.
So okay. All right. Okay. I'm going to take a classic example, just a perfect example of what I did. I bought some Eufy security cameras, and they were made in China, you know, a number of years ago. They're made in China. I bought them a few months ago there. And they cost me about, $75 a piece, you know? Yeah. So I put them around the house there. And they're $75. Well, if Trump is going to say, hey, I'm going to put 100% tariff on that, that means I'm going to see those Eufy security cameras at 100 or 125. How does China get them down then so that I don't see it? I guess that's what
China
I'm asking.
China pays the tariff.
What's that?
China lowers the retail or the wholesale cost of the good. They basically say we're subsidizing it. We're going to lower the wholesale cost, so it incorporates the tariff into the price, and you still get it for $75. That's how they. It's the same way they manipulate their currency, so they always have a currency advantage on us. Okay, they peg everything against the U.S. market, everything they do, and they depend from an economic perspective. They depend upon, and power perspective, having almost full infiltration into the U.S. market. They do have that infiltration because they subsidize products on their end. So if the cost, if they figure it out, okay, the cost to sell this product retail is now going to be $80 a piece so we can make money. The government would say, well, we'll subsidize another $5. In terms of the cost of production.
Okay.
That's how they do it. It doesn't work. The basic theory about tariffs, tariffs having the impact of making foreign goods more expensive, so domestic goods are affordable, become more affordable or more reasonable to buy. That works. That's true if you're dealing with the economies that aren't controlled. But if you have a completely controlled economy, they have the capacity to manipulate their price by virtue of the subsidies they put into the goods.
Okay, so it doesn't. So the tariff doesn't mess with China. It does mess with the EU. I noticed that yesterday he talked about wanting to put a huge tariff on John Deere if they were to outsource their manufacturing to Mexico, let's say. And the moment he would do this, he would put a big tariff on John Deere tractors. Would that hurt us?
Yeah, that would cause the John Deere tractor to be less competitive with uh-huh. its competitors, and would make it so that the reason John Deere would move a plant to Mexico, narco state, would be because they would be trying to get cheaper labor. The tariff would offset the advantage they'd have of cheaper labor by making the front, not allowing them to lower the price and basically putting an additional cost in to make it kind of even out.
Yeah, because I understand what John Deere or these other companies are trying to look at, though. My concern is that tariffs, if they're not used wisely, it doesn't make the cost of American labor competitive necessarily. I mean, you look at the regulatory state, you know, with all these requirements and minimum wage, you have a pulse in California and you get $20 an hour, you know, those kind of things. You know, that doesn't get changed with a tariff, does it?
No, it doesn't. Those costs are fixed. And states that don't have higher minimum wages than the federal standard, it's fixed at the federal standards, the lowest you can go. Of course, states that what we know is that, I'll just give you a real-life example. In Ohio, in Springfield, Ohio, the reason we're hearing about 20,000 Haitians in Springfield, Ohio, is because they imported labor for a manufacturing mm-hmm. facility in Springfield, Ohio. So they built a manufacturing facility, and it's essentially being staffed by Haitians who are making $9 an hour. And if they hadn't imported the Haitians, they would have been paying workers $17-$20 an hour to do the same job. So that's one of the ways companies using federal
immigration policy.
Immigration policy or illegal immigration policy in some cases. That's how companies can kind of skate the higher cost of labor in the United States. And it's, you know, so it's a classic battle of how do you deal with it. And if I were advising Donald Trump, and I've tried to get this in front of him, and maybe they've seen it, they've started talking about one of the things I was talking about a long time ago in terms of tax policy. My tax policy has evolved. Okay? Mm-hmm. My tax policy now is simple. Everything, what we should do is we should say every dollar below $2 million in profit, not revenue, $2 million in profit is not taxed across the board, all corporations. You have a $2 million standard deduction on your profit. And if you did that, virtually every single small business in this country would have no tax. They wouldn't have to pay accountants to worry about the taxes. It'd be very simple. It would put so much money into small businesses' pockets that they'd be able to expand. We'd be able to fill the place in strip mall that hasn't been really filled up since the pandemic.
For a long time, yeah.
Because we'd be putting money into the pockets of the people who produce jobs. And the beauty of that plan is it doesn't punish you for making the making $2 million at $1. It's just you're paying taxes on the $1. So you're paying the 23, 24, 25%, 21, whatever it is. You're paying 21 cents minimum on that $1. That's all it does. So you end up having a 21 cent tax burden if you make $2 million at $1. So all the big companies would still benefit from it. But $2 million to them is nothing. That's zero. That's a rounding error.
It really is beneficiary of if you truly want to generate small businesses and get small businesses that eventually want to become those big businesses. That helps a lot, doesn't it?
If I want to get people, young people, employed to do things that like sweeping and stocking shelves and things like that, which people are saying, you know, they're kind of not. There's just not as much of a market for it because of the high cost of labor. If you want to get those young people employed, even in the high minimum wage states, the best way to do it is to let those businesses, those small businesses, provide the entry level jobs that young people need to have to become employees and learn the system. And the best way to do that is to stop taxing the people who are going to hire our young people.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Makes sense to me. Maybe you should run for president.
Well, I'm trying to get the people in charge to get it.
Okay.
Multiple conversations.
Hey, I get that. Hey, Rick, I haven't been able to clear this call. I don't know if they. Hopefully, they want to talk with you. Did you want to talk with Rick or ask a question about something we're doing here? Who's this?
Yeah, when Trump put the tariff on steel, it took about 2 months before steel jumped 30%, and then probably about a month after that, went up another 15. So, and
well, I'm going to rebut that because here's what also
happened.
Okay. Hey, thanks, caller. I appreciate it. Let me let Rick respond to that. Okay.
Bye.
All right.
You know, I paid very close attention to that because the theory behind the tariff on steel was that we were going to then recreate steel jobs here in America. The intent of the steel tariff was, in fact, to do exactly what Bill described, increase the cost of Chinese steel, lower, and hence making American steel more more competitive.
Competitive, yeah.
That was the intent. But when you looked at it, what ended up happening over the long haul was that there were very few American steel jobs. There are some American steel jobs in non-union shops that did get created. But by and large, what China did to try to then get around it is they not only subsidized their own steel, but they sent steel. They had stockpiles of steel and aluminum. Well, aluminum was also tariffed. And they stockpiled in Mexico and Canada. And then they imported them from Mexico and Canada as if it was made there and under the NAFTA.
Okay.
And so the steel thing is an interesting thing. I have to look and see if the numbers in terms of the cost of steel going up are accurate or not. I do know that that when I looked at it overall, it didn't have the job creation effect that I thought it would. And what he described is exactly what Trump thought would happen. But what Trump discovered, much to his surprise and everybody's surprise, it ended up being a net only a minor net plus because China did then subsidize, and they also tried to import their steel through third party countries and
to get around it.
Why.
And to get around the tariff. Hey, speaking of steel, both candidates are against U.S. steel being sold to the Japanese, and I don't know. Right. I'm looking at U.S. steel as, you know, most of its plants are very antiquated. My family has worked in these plants, and it's going to take billions upon billions of investment to revitalize these companies. And the Japanese folks have the money to do it. Why would that be a bad idea? You know,
that's a great question, and I haven't looked that closely into it. But I will tell you in general, I'll give you an example that I do know. There's an aluminum plant that used to be in the Flathead Lake Layer area of Montana, and they made aluminum. And after a lot of fights and labor fights and the like, the owner sold the plant, in this case, the Chinese. And what happened was within a week, all the people were laid off. The Chinese came in. They stripped everything down to the concrete and transported it back to China. And so I don't know the danger of having an overseas control of a major steel manufacturer, antiquated or not, is we're then at the mercy of the owners of that corporation, and that would be the Japanese. The Japanese don't have all that much money. Okay, the Japanese are an economy that's in worse trouble than ours. They have an aging population that's much worse than ours. They've got 200% debt to GDP, and so I don't. While they are an ally now, I think there's a good reason to sit there and say, you know, maybe we don't let them buy the U.S. nameplate.
Okay.
I don't know. It's I've given it, truthfully, I'm going to say less than zero thought, but pretty close.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Maybe at the next D.C. Swamp update, you'll tell me about that.
I'll look up U.S. Steel. I'll become an expert on steel prices in the last 10 years.
You'll look into this deeply. And what I find interesting is that I remember in the 1980s when I was a very young man at that point in time, and at that point, you know, Japan was going to kill us all. Right. You know, and that's what we were worried about back then. It's a very different world now. And
the irony is the it was a guy named Deming, who was Edward Deming, who was pushing this theory that the state corporate partnership that they had in Japan was the reason why they were eating our lunch in terms of manufacturing and the like and building better cars. And look
what happened. I mean, they've had more than one lost decade.
It fell apart about 90. It fell apart in the 90s, that whole theory. Mm-hmm. The problem with America right now is, while nobody's talking about Deming's theory, the net result of the administrative state having such power over corporate America, and vice versa, corporate America having such power over a corporate state, over the administrative state, is that we are effectively falling into an emulation of the Deming model, which was proven to fail.
Uh-huh. In other words, we've turned into Japan.
All innovation.
We've turned into a different version of Japan. Lots of control of the government. Government control.
That would be. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, in Japan, one of the reasons that system seemed to work for a while when they were rebuilding their economy before they got to be a mature economy was because they had a very stratified class system going back to the samurais, and the companies that the people who owned those companies were the leaders of the clans who I use C-L-A-N S, the clans that are like the Toyota family. They were all leaders, so they had this whole stratified structure where people worked, and it all kind of fell into place. The challenge is once people break out of that stratification because they become more wealthy, the stratification breaks down, and then your command and control breaks down, and the system that they had that worked for a short while didn't work anymore. So those are a couple of problems.
All right. Hey, Rick, I appreciate that. On that note, I think we're just going to have to use the one-hit wonder, the vapors, turning Japanese as our exit. Okay.
Oh, no. Hey, that's hilarious.
We'll catch you next Friday on the DC Swamp at regular
next
time, okay?
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. It is 7:37. Ran a little long with Rick, but the DC Swamp update. D-Epic, that dailytorch.com, and as we turn Japanese and hopefully can unturn from the Japanese model, I guess.
Power outage. The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
We'll catch up with the rest of the news here in just a moment. State Representative Dwayne Junker will then join me. A quick talk on the latest on at least the meeting that they ended up having with, what about all of these non-citizen voters that are on the voting roll and it means nothing. Don't worry about it, and we'll get it all fixed. And Peter's here. Hello, Peter. You had a question about that Cerakote lawsuit, that trial that is going on in Medford right now in federal court. It's the Rust-Oleum against Cerakote in White City.
Mm-hmm. So Cerakote is in White City, so you can get a hold of the product. I was told that somebody said you can get it at Walmart and... I was in Colorado when I heard this, but...
Oh, okay. Oh, this is the... what this was all about is that Cerakote, which is NIC Industries in White City, and that's, where they are. And by the way, Cerakote's great stuff, we know that. But they were partnered with Rust-Oleum, and they sold one of these kits that would make your headlights... that were all faded and make them shiny and clear again. You know, those restoration kits that they have out there. And those are apparently still in, according to Rogue Valley Times, Walmart, AutoZone, Lowe's, other major retailers. So that stuff is still out there, the Cerakote products. But what they're claiming is that Rust-Oleum, after their partnership dissolved, that Rust-Oleum ended up reverse engineering their Cerakote stuff and then started selling their own stuff, kind of like a ripoff then. And then Rust-Oleum's then claiming that Cerakote reached out to their people, or it's just a kind of a mess, really.
surprise.
Yeah. So that's that appears to be what happens. And this has been a 4 or 5 day trial. I guess today should probably be the final day. It'll be interesting to hear how this ends up coming out.
It always struck me when I first changed those things out on a car, and I thought, this is the biggest scam going, that these things being plastic, obviously you can't put glass in there, or I don't know if you could put safety somehow, but it seemed like it's ridiculous. You look at them after 5 years, and it's amazing you can use your headlights.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, and some of them are worse than others. My PT is now starting after 14 years to get some occlusion in there. My wife's 2006 Passat definitely has some of it. I actually bought some new headlights to actually replace the actual, plastic glass in those things. Then I found that there's way too much work to put it in. So I might go get one of these kits and try that instead. It might be a little easier for this particular.
Hey, let me mention this one other thing that you mentioned for your audience that I heard a little part of a show the other day on the wind, on the power generation out in the ocean.
Yeah.
And this guy who's the lead on it is, of course, out of either OSU or U of O. And the thing that I deciphered from his description of it was that it is a company that, of course, even though it sounds like it's a privately held company, it is the University of Oregon. I think that's the school that runs the company. And he did say, and of course, he had all these credentials, but he said, you know, this idea of the, instead of the windmills of trying to tap into the ocean going vertically and horizontally is incredibly difficult. And my reading between the lines said, this is really, and actually he said, this is a highly risky venture, you know. So to me, it is just.
Okay, was this a person talking about the windmill or the wave energy? Because the wave energy to me sounds very intriguing, because the waves, you know, the ocean's always moving. You know, we know that.
Right.
Right.
And it was the wave energy. But he was really saying it's tricky because the waves are not just going side to side. They're going up and down, too. So you've got it, you know, you've got that constantly to deal with. And it sounded awfully sketchy to me, but
have you ever seen, there is because that's true, because it's it doesn't move, the waves don't just move in one direction and then trying to capture that that energy. But what I was wondering about is if they could do some variation of have you ever seen those windmills that don't look like windmills, but they look like almost a bunch of fishing rods sticking up out of the ground. And it takes the wave, you know, the bending motion back and forth, like the way grass would blow in the wind. And
interesting.
And then it transfers that energy into electrical power. And the beauty of it is that you know, it doesn't matter which direction the wind is blowing; it doesn't have to flip around to take it. It just bends that. And I thought that was interesting. Some of that stuff is just really fascinating when it comes right down to it.
Well, you know, there was a guy in Ashland probably 15 years ago, I remember, who put up a windmill it's a vertical tube.
Yes. I've seen those too.
Is that what you're talking about?
No. The ones that I was talking about, they actually look like almost fiberglass
fishing
grass.
Rods.
Yeah, like big, long, big, tall ones that would bend and rock back and forth, and that would transmit the energy, I thought. But pretty fascinating stuff. Peter, I appreciate the call. Thanks for that. All right.
Thank you.
All right, 7:45. State Rep Dwayne Junker here. Quick update on the 1,300 or so voters that were not supposed to be in the system. But don't worry. There was never any danger of any election being changed. Don't worry that Governor Kotek is on the case. We'll talk more about that next.
Lynn Barton here, Medicare advisor at Sky Park Insurance.
I'm Tony Dusty with Dusty's Transmissions, and I'm on KMED.
State Representative Dwayne Junker back here. Dwayne, you were hanging out and observing the meeting as everybody was getting together and saying that there's nothing to worry about with Oregon's voting registration system. Pretty much what happened, right? What's the story?
Oh, the Dems, they did a cover. You know, the Dems are so well at covering everything up at the Capitol. It's come in and it's the fix is in. So, you know, Chair Bowman, he's the chair. He's also the majority leader of the House. And so he was in charge and, you know, he asked his question, you know, about apologizing to the people that were registered to vote. And, of course, that you could see the fix was in already. We're going to send letters out apologizing to these people. Well, nine of them voted, Bill. Nine of them voted. We didn't even do they're not going to do an investigation.
Uh-huh.
We're just going to apologize. That's what we apologize. We're not going to do an investigation because we don't want to mess up their immigration status and getting citizenship, I guess.
Oh, so we're going to apologize for the illegal aliens who were registered to vote. Got it. Okay. All right. Boy, I tell you, Oregon really knows how to pull off a fraud here, State Rep. Now, in all seriousness, was there any conversation coming from the majority party in charge that would want to take the voting registration that we have right now and run it through whether there's an E-Verify or other federal database to make sure that everyone who is not a citizen is weeded out of the process.
That's not, and they don't want that. They just want to tell you that our systems are working well and we have great people working there. There's never accountability coming from the majority side because they work for them.
Okay. Well, I guess obviously, though, the system's working for the majority Democrats. That has to be part of the issue.
Working for them, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And how do we know if they're not going to investigate it? How do we know if, as a minority side or as voters, that the system truly is working? But it's not, because we don't get to investigate. DOJ or the Secretary of State are not going to get involved. They're not referred these nine people that did vote to investigate and see how they did. Why did they vote? I mean, they broke the law, Bill. They broke the law, and they voted. If it was a mistake, why didn't they just come into this, you know, the clerk's office or come wherever and say, you know what, I got this ballot, and I wasn't supposed to get it because I'm not eligible. But no, they did vote.
In all fairness here, Dwayne, is there not a possibility that these people, well, hey, the state sent me a ballot, I guess I'm okay to vote?
Well, if someone gives you stolen goods, and you know they're stolen goods, should you accept them? It's still a crime.
Yeah, do most of the people even living in Oregon now, you know, given that we've been so conditioned to think that, you know, hey, illegal immigration is perfectly okay now, you know, as a sanctuary state, maybe most of them think, hey, if you're letting me stay here, I'm allowed to vote too. I mean, I'm dead serious when I say this. I'm not convinced that that most people realize it's a crime to do what they're doing. I don't think it says it on the when you sign the ballot that, oh, by the way, if you're an illegal alien or a non-citizen, you know, this is a crime when you sign this. There's nothing like that on the ballot. I mean, not that I'm trying to give the Democrats a pass, because all they're trying to do is cover up the corruption, okay? But I'm just saying.
I see your point, but we haven't even investigated and even talked to the people. So a lot of assuming doesn't answer any questions. Now, if they would have came back and said, you know, blah, 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 person, we've talked to these nine people that did vote. They made a mistake, and we've proved that they didn't understand. We'd have a different conversation, but they're not even moving to that part.
They're not even interested. In other words, they're not even interested to find out why or how this happened. They're not interested in knowing.
No, they're not interested in knowing why these nine people, and we don't even know if it's nine people. It could have been more, because they didn't do this on their own. A third party brought this up, and then they said, oh, we should check. Why is a third party telling you to do your job?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's just it. And this is why I'm concerned here, and I would imagine you and other people are concerned about this too. I had Francine, a listener, was talking about a story that I had not read yet, but I think I saw the headline that they were talking about several hundred voters that were improperly registered to vote in Oklahoma. We have 100,000 in Arizona that they're actively, you know, doing their best to try to get them off the rolls. And this is considered very controversial right now. People that don't belong on it, as we're heading into a presidential election. I have great difficulty believing that it's only 1,269 people in Oregon.
We have there's so much that should be investigating. I was at the Republican office yesterday. And she was telling me about where she worked at a facility that had people with dementia. Mm-hmm. And someone came in and helped them fill their ballots out. What? And I don't know if it's true, but people with dementia, you know, I feel for these people. But this is stuff we should be investigating. People should not be taken advantage of. We should have fair elections. I know ballot harvesting is legal, but when you hear these things, who's investigating them? Who's, you know, who's supposed to do this? The Democrats don't want to hear it. We know it's true. Even if it's 10 people, it's still a crime. It's still a crime.
Now, my guy tells me, though, State Rep Yunker, that it's way more than 9 or 10 people. And
I probably agree with you. I mean, I agree with you, but how do we know if we're not doing the checks or we don't want to check, you know, because it might be worse. And people have a right to feel good about their vote. That is our system. And it irritates me how the cover-up, and this is not just the cover-up of voting, it's everything at the Capitol, they cover up. You know, there was another committee I was in the other day, and they're talking about the Marjorie people. And I asked them, who is the Marjorie people? Because
Are you talking about marginalized people? What is that?
Marginalized people, yes, that have, you know, that are, and we're talking about health care and stuff.
Oh.
And I go, I have 5 of the 6 poorest zip codes in my district or my county here. And I finally got it out. The chair didn't want to talk about it. And then I got him to say it. And it was, we're trying to bring more power to people of color. It wasn't really about taking people that are poor or historically poor or come from areas that are generational poor or poverty. It's about giving people power because of something that happened 400 years ago of slavery. That's what came out of their mouth.
So you have poor people living right now in Josephine County that are not considered as valuable then as poor people of color up in Salem or up in Multnomah County. That's kind of where they're. It's a boy. Talk about a racist spoil systems here.
Yeah, and this lady is a professor at the Portland State University doing this study and telling us this. I'm like, you have to ask the questions to try to get between the lines of what they're really doing, because the fix is really in on all this stuff. And the Democrats are really organized. They control every part of the institutions to the departments. And they, so when we're asking these questions, you can always see the fix somewhere, because they control so much. It's not a fair system for the people here.
And I would dare say, at what point does the corrupt state of government, you know, the Oregon government then, no longer deserve the respect of its citizens, you know, even being looked at as legitimate? You know, it's getting to that point when you hear these stories, because how can you say that these elections that we're having, that they don't ensure that only people who are legal citizens are voting, and they don't really want to find out what illegal citizens are not, or not being taken out of here. You know, it's not just the fix. It's illegitimate what they're doing at this point. And I don't know, do they not realize they're playing with fire at this point, majority party, or do you think they're just going to be in power forever, no matter what, and no one will ever question them?
Forever. It feels like everything's a money scam because of they get donations. You know, another one I caught the other day was, so we had this you know, what's it called, when the pills, you know, that is a lawsuit out, and all the pharmaceuticals pay for, you know, money back to the states for the addiction, you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
Pharmaceutical thing. And the state of Oregon got a big pot of money. And so they're supposed to divvy it out to the counties and everything else. And then they go, yeah, we gave 30% to the tribes. Well, the tribes is only less than 1% of the population of Oregon, but they got 30% of it. How is that fair? They got $180 million.
Oh, I can tell you how that's fair, State Representative Dwayne Yunker, because the tribal interests in the state of Oregon contribute lots of money to political campaigns. That's what.
Exactly. That's where it comes from. They give them money, and then they turn around, and then the state gives them other monies. It's not because we're being fair to the people or trying to help everybody. It is a fix.
Hmm. And by the way, I will dare say that there probably is more of an addiction problem on some of the tribal lands. I don't want to completely toss that under there, but they're very good they're very good. I should say the tribes are very good at getting a good return on their political investment. Okay, we'll just kind of leave it at that. Very effective.
And you got to remember, they don't pay taxes. They don't pay taxes.
Even better. Even better. There's another return on the political investment. All right. All right.
So,
State Rep. Dwayne Junker, thanks for bringing it up. Thanks for sharing the story of the non-investigation of the non-citizens that are, I guess, going to be voting in the non-election, because we don't want to know about them voting in the election, the selection coming up. All right.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, can I say one thing real fast?
Sure.
About what happened in Josephine County last night?
Sure.
So there's a Democrat called Deb Berg was caught by Chris Barnett stealing his signs. And the Democrats always complain about sign stealing, but she was caught red-handed on video and picture by Chris Barnett.
No kidding.
Stealing his signs. Yes.
No kidding. Wow.
No right. kidding.
Well,
the Democrats are doing this in the end, and they've been caught red-handed. This is not legal, and I hope they know that we're watching them.
Well, I'm sure that the Democrats will conduct an investigation of this individual.
Oh, sure they will.
Yeah.
I'm sure they will.
All right. Thanks, Dwayne. We'll have you back.
All right, thank you, Bo.
Man, just a bizarre time. It's a couple minutes after 8.